The following is intended solely for the use of those with a sense of adventure.
I'm shaking the dust of this town off my feet, and I'm going to see the world.
This is Travel with Hawkeye. Here's your host, Mark Hawkeye Lewis.
Welcome to the first episode of Season 3 of Travel with Hawkeye. So excited that you make us part of your travel podcasting experience. We have two incredible guests as we talk about cruising today. First of all, going on cruise lines, by the way. That's what I mean by cruising. Aaron Foster from the Unofficial Guide to Disney Cruises is going to join us today. We love the unofficial guides. I highly recommend if you go to Disneyland or Disney World or Universal Orlando or take a Disney cruise to get one of the unofficial guides because they are very, very thorough. And Aaron's going to be joining us today. The new guide for the Disney Cruises is out. And there's some interesting things there, too, that they talk about, like river cruises and new attractions and new ports of call and some new destinations. We'll talk all about that with Aaron Foster in just a few moments. Also, Rosie Spinks is a writer. She writes for Quartz, which is an international business website. And she has an amazing article called "People Fall Off Cruise Ships with Alarming Regularity. Can Anything Be Done to Stop It?" It's a fascinating article. 18 people fall off on average a year from cruise ships. 4 people that fell in the last month alone. And I didn't even know this, but there's technology that can help stop this problem, help you be found. Because often what happens is people fall off a cruise ship. The cruise ship doesn't know for quite some time. And like I just said, there is technology to help solve this problem. And also the article delves into other crimes that can happen on a cruise ship. And there's a term in there that I never really thought about called cruise ship is, quote, a floating city with no police. And think about it. You have a city of basically 6,000 people, a temporary city, be it, but still one that doesn't have a police force, and all sorts of things could happen. And she delves into all that in an article. We're going to be talking to Rosie on the second part of the podcast today. But we're going to start with Aaron Foster, who not only is one of the writers for the Unofficial Guide to Disney Cruises 2019, but at one time you're also part of Walt Disney's Moms Panel. And I never even heard of that before. Are you still a member of that?
I'm not. They rotate us on and off. I'm not currently on, but there's a decent chance I'll go back on. I'm off and on for parts of 5 years I was on, and I'm sure I'll cycle back on again at some point.
How do you get on that? That sounds so cool.
It's really cool, and it really changed my life and has given me lifelong friends, like friends forever, soulmates. Every fall, usually right around Labor Day, they have they don't like us to call it a contest, but it's a contest where people who are the Disney experts in their neighborhood, in their towns, who help their friends, can apply to be on the Moms Panel. And it's a sort of a misleading name because there are also dads and people who are not parents. There's been this is now the 11th year of the panel, and there have been 20-something men on it. So Moms Panel is a little misleading. But yeah, you just you apply, and there's several rounds of applications. But the first is some brief, 100-word essay kind of thing.
Wow.
And if you make it forward, it ends up in phone interviews, and then after that, they will bring you to Orlando for training, and then you're compensated with some travel for your family and that sort of thing. But there are experts now on Disney World, Disneyland, Disney Cruise Line, and they answer questions in English, Spanish, and Portuguese, and I believe French also. It's a great opportunity, and it's people who are experts in Disney travel will answer questions about your planning, stuff like where should I eat? My kid has an allergy. My kid's afraid of snakes. Which ride should I avoid? Where should I stay on this kind of budget? Really, like any dorky question you have, somebody on the panel has experienced it and can give you firsthand knowledge of how to solve your problem. Yeah.
Is there a ride at Disney where I need to be aware of snakes?
Oh, yeah.
Seriously?
Well, first of all, there are real snakes in the animal kingdom.
Okay, I did not know that.
The Jungle Cruise they're fake. The real ones are in the Animal Kingdom, and in the Jungle Cruise they're fake. But there's like a whole room with snakes, all over the walls and that sort of thing.
I stand advised. Thank you very much. I'm not a big fan of snakes. Me and Indiana Jones, we don't like snakes.
Exactly.
All right. So it's interesting because when you work on the Moms Panel, you actually are somewhat employed by Disney, are you not?
We are contractors.
Yeah. But I mean, you're working for Disney is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But now it's kind of cool because you've parlayed that to working for the fine folks at the Unofficial Guide to Disney Cruise Lines, and you've worked for them for a while. And I'm a big fan of the Unofficial Guide, not because they offer you secret information or anything that bad stuff about Disney, but because they're so thorough. And I always recommend to people, if you're going to any type of Disney property or Universal Orlando, check out the Unofficial Guide because it's so thorough.
Right. That's what we pride ourselves on at the Unofficial Guides. Incredible, thorough detail. Again, it's like if you have some niche need or question, the answer is going to be in those books.
Yeah. So the new guidebook to Disney Cruise Lines has come out, 2019. And as always, there's things that they've upgraded. And the Disney Cruise Line has really become a moneymaker for the Disney people. I mean, this is really something that, I mean, it's taken off in the past 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're doing a lot of expanding. So the big news at Disney Cruise Line is that they have ordered 3 new ships. So there are currently 4 Disney Cruise Line ships, and by the end of 2023, there will be 7. So there's a lot of speculation about where those ships, the new ships, will go. Will there be different cabin configurations, different entertainments? Will they be home ported in different places? There's a lot of sort of like online speculation about what will the names of the new ships be. So it's a really exciting time for Disney Cruise Line.
Well, we've talked before, and I was like shocked at where they all went now. So where do they go now, and what is the speculation where they will go in the future?
Okay. So now the Disney Cruise Line ships, there are a couple that are based primarily in the Caribbean, and so they have different routes all through Northwest, East Caribbean, and the Bahamas. And recently, they also started going to Bermuda. So that's sort of the warm weather area. But there's also transatlantic and Panama Canal crossings. They do sort of a California-Mexico route with the Disney Wonder. The Wonder during the summer is ported in Vancouver and goes to Alaska. And next year, it'll be going to Hawaii. And then the Disney Magic in the summer does all parts of Europe. So they do some northern routes where 2 years ago I went to Russia on the Disney Magic with my family. They do Iceland, they end up in Dover, England. And then for part of the summer they do the Mediterranean, so ports in Italy and Spain mostly.
Now, when we talk
when
we talk Europe, though, they're basically these are ocean liners that are stopping at ports that have ocean ports of call, cities that have ocean ports of call. But am I correct in understanding that Disney is also going to get into the river cruise industry?
Yes, they did that about 3 years ago, and I've been on 2 of those now. So Disney doesn't own the ships. They are owned by AMA Waterways, which uses the ships in the off season, but they have, I have been on the Rhine River and the Danube River, and they also, next year are starting on the Seine. And those are really luxury, personalized service, river cruises. So, instead of where the Disney Dream and Fantasy, the larger of the two ocean liners, each have the capacity of about 4,000 guests. The river cruises have about 150, I think 156 guests. So it's a much scaled down size-wise, but that also allows them to do much more personalized service, fresher food because they're in port. I mean, I took one where, let's say on an ocean cruise, you missed your arrival time back on the ship, you'd be stuck in that port for, overnight scrambling. You know, on the river cruise, you could take an Uber to the next port.
How awesome. Well, let me ask you this. In your opinion, I mean, I understand the appeal of the Disney cruise ships, and we've talked before, and I've had many friends go on it. It's just incredible. Uh-huh. On the Disney River, if you're going through a river cruise in Europe, is it really worth it to go on a Disney-type cruise? I mean, because the attractions usually are these unbelievable cities that you're going to on a river cruise. Is the Disney cruise, is it that much better that it's good for families to do that?
Well, if you're with a family, it's by far the best way to do a river cruise because river cruises in general tend to very much attract retirees and like advanced retirees. So I was speaking to one of the cruise directors on the waterways, which Disney contracts with. And when Disney contracts with them, you know, there are several dozen children, and the average age of the adult is in their 40s, whereas if they're running their regular cruises, the average age of the adult is in their 70s.
Wow.
So if you have kids, or if you're a kid at heart, or, you know, if you're under the age of 65 or so, you're probably going to be more comfortable on the Disney cruise. And they have activities and excursions to the cities that are included. All the excursions are included and designed for various ages. So one of the river cruises I took, we stopped in Vienna, and there were museum tours and, you know, Mozart concerts for adults. But at those venues, there were also scavenger hunt and relay races for the little kids that were with us at the same spot. So they design it so that you can, you know, enjoy whatever your age is. And you're also not obligated to go on their excursions. So if there's some particular attraction in that port that you want to do on your own, you're certainly always welcome to do that.
You know, it's interesting when I asked that question, in my mind I was thinking, why would I want to spend the extra money to go on the Disney Cruise Line? But after you said the average age is 70 on the other cruise line, I'm thinking, boy, why would I not want to go on the Disney Cruise Line for the river cruise?
Well, for instance, like Viking River Cruises is one of the, you know, the largest, most prevalent ones. They won't let anyone on their ships under age 18, so you can't even set foot on those ships with kids.
Yeah, interesting. Okay.
So it's a real difference. Yeah.
We were thinking about taking a river. We've always wanted to do the river cruise, but I didn't realize, you know, we might be the only ones there in our age group. Could happen.
The one exception sometimes I hear is like a Christmas one where they stop at like the holiday Christmas markets in Germany, that sort of thing. Those sometimes have kids on them, on the lines that allow kids, but otherwise it's really almost exclusively retirees that go on those.
Now, I understand also that Disney is also doing things on some of the cruise lines this year, the Marvel Days at Sea. What does all that entitle?
So on some of the cruises, there are select days where they have a theme day. So the themes available are Frozen, Star Wars, or Marvel. And it's, you know, not every day on the cruise, but on those days that are themed, everything is themed. So they'll have special characters that come out just for that cruise. So you get a Marvel cruise, and like you're going to run into Black Panther walking down the hallway, and Thor is there with his hammer, and so you can meet all those special characters. But they also will do things like show all the movies in the theater, and that's all included for free. I happened to be on one where it was the first release day of one of the new Star Wars movies, and they showed it on the ship for the release the same day as they did on land, which was awesome. And then they theme all of the food. So, like, you know, the cookies have brown frosting and they're Chewbacca themed and that sort of thing. Yeah. So you've got food, you've got films, you've got characters, and they will add in special, you know, crafts and scavenger hunts and other fun activities all related to the theme of the cruise day.
Now, Disney Cruise Lines has their own private island. Did they buy a second island too? Did I hear that correct?
Last time I checked it, not every I and T were dotted and crossed.
Okay.
But yes, they're in negotiations for 700 acres on another island in the Bahamas to accommodate what will be a much larger fleet in the next few years, so that, yes, they will have two private areas. The new island is going to be somewhat like Disney's space in Hawaii, where they won't have the whole island, but they'll have these 700 acres that they're fully developing with hotels and restaurants and I'm sure pool areas and water adventure areas and that sort of thing. So it will effectively be a second private island.
Wow, pretty interesting. That's pretty cool. Okay, let me ask you this question here, because a lot of people, I mean, it's a major expense to go on a Disney cruise. A lot of people, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. What age group is too young to take your kids on a Disney cruise?
You know, they'll accept anybody age 6 months and older for most of the cruises. There are a few of the longer ones, like the transatlantic one, where you have to be a year old. But for most of them, it's 6 months. I personally wouldn't take a baby that tiny, because the reality is that even the largest of the staterooms, the cabins, even though Disney has some of the largest in the cruise industry, they're relatively small compared to hotel rooms. So if you've got a crib, you've got a stroller, you've got, you know, a diaper genie, you've got all the accoutrement that young kids need, it's going to take up a lot of space. So that makes your room feel cluttered. And then Disney, their claim to fame is their kids clubs. So there is free kids entertainment and basically babysitting included for ages 3 to 17. So there's, you can put your kid there and there's going to be constant entertainment and activities and, you know, camp counselor type experience there. But that starts at age 3. For ages 6 months to age 3, there's a nursery, but you're paying, it's like, I think it's $9 an hour. So that's another expense that if you're going to use it a lot can add up. So I would say if your child is, say, 4 or 5 and sleeps well and eats well and all of that and doesn't have a fear of characters or anything like that, then 4 or 5 is a great place to start, and maybe 7 or 8 is ideal.
Okay, that is a great piece of advice there. Also, let's talk a little bit about the dress code. First of all, I think you told me this last time we had you on that, was it 30%, 25% of people who go on Disney cruises don't even have kids? What's the percentage?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've gone with girlfriends. My husband and I are going with a couple other couples in June of this year. So, yeah, absolutely. There are adult spaces. There's adult restaurants. There are adult lounges. There's adult pools. So if you want to go and you don't want to see kids, you can certainly, you know, you can't avoid them entirely, but yeah, you can certainly, you know, get a quite adult experience. And it's a really popular vacation for like sorority sister reunions and that sort of thing, particularly for women, because it's a very, very safe cruise line where nobody's going to hassle you. And so, yeah, it's a great place for adults. Absolutely.
Wait, is there like a dress code, though, for dinner and so forth? Because some cruises have that.
There is for 2 of the restaurants on the larger ships. So all of the Disney cruise ships have a restaurant called Paolo, which is upscale. And there's a relatively modest surcharge of $30 per person for Paolo. And then the larger ships, the Fantasy and the Dream, have a restaurant called Remy that has a more substantial upcharge of $90 a person. And those have, Paolo and Remy have dress codes. Paolo's is pretty, you know, you can wear jeans and a nice sweater and closed-toe shoes. So it's not fancy.
Yeah.
Remy has a real dress code where you want men to wear jackets and women to wear, you know, a classy pantsuit or dress, or and some people decide to wear, you know, tuxes and gowns, but that's not required at all.
So wow.
Yeah.
Traveling with a gown and a tuxedo. That's some high class travel there.
All of the longer sailings have something called formal night, and there is a wide interpretation of what that means. And,
okay.
You know, if you get into the chats online, there's like a fierce competition. It's my vacation. I want to wear what I want. And other people are like, it's formal night. You should be formal. You know.
Man, someone who travels with a tux and a dress makes me think of the steamer trunks that people are bringing on the Titanic.
Well, yeah, that's not me. You know? I'm like a nice sundress. I'm good. You know?
Yeah, there you go. All right. Well, the book is incredible. All of the unofficial guides, I highly recommend them. The Unofficial Guide to Disney Cruise Line 2019 out now. And also, it's got some comparisons. I like to just plug a few things that you guys have also in the books, and you get to chime in. Comparison between a list of prices on the cruise line versus a Disney World vacation. That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
And also, this is a great, too. This may appeal to some people there. Advice on cruising with a family member with autism. We have this in our family. We have a couple kids who are on the spectrum, and I really appreciate that article in there. It's written by Allison Singer, president of the Autism Science Foundation. So it's great to have that, too, if you want to. I would assume it's a very positive article on this was a great place to take a child with autism and some things that kind of accommodate someone with special needs.
Yeah, absolutely. Allison is actually a neighbor of mine and has done incredible work with the Autism Science Foundation, and she has taken her her daughter with autism on Disney Cruise Line several times, and she gives some really good tips for families in that situation. Yeah.
Thank you. All right. Fantastic. All right. Really appreciate the time here, and continued success, Erin. And thanks for all your insights on the Disney Cruise Lines.
Sure, absolutely. Happy to talk anytime.
If you go to our website, travelwithhawkeye.net, click on blog because we have show notes about all our different podcast episodes, and I'll have a link to the unofficial guides to Walt Disney cruises. Also, there'll be a link to this article that Rosie Spinks wrote called People Fall Off Cruise Ships with Alarming Regularity. Can anything be done to stop it? And this was one of the most fascinating travel articles I've written in a long time. That's also posted on our blog, as I said. And Rosie joins us now on the Travel with Hawkeye podcast. First of all, where did you get the idea of doing an article about falling overboard?
I'm a travel reporter, and I had never been on a cruise, and I had never thought about going on one. But obviously, you know, cruises are a big part of the travel industry. They're only getting bigger. A lot of people love them. And so as a journalist, I was sort of mystified by this industry that didn't personally appeal to me, but appeals to so many people. And I started sort of reading more about cruising and following more people who watch the industry, and was just really struck by how this industry operates in this thoroughly globalized manner that I don't think most cruisers or sort of normal people think about. And since, you know, at Quartz, we focus a lot on sort of how the economy operates on a global scale, that just seemed like a story that was a really good fit for us.
Yeah, it's an interesting kind of business model because they visit tons of foreign countries, but often their port of origin is some weird place, like, as you call them, flags of convenience, like the Bahamas or Bermuda or something.
Right. So I wouldn't say point of origin, because they don't have to have any sort of actual meaningful or physical tie to that place. In some cases, you can flag a ship online in what's called an open registry. In a place like America or the UK, a ship owner actually has to have a meaningful tie to the U.S., you know, some kind of ownership. There has to be some sort of like national stake in ownership terms. The ships themselves are flagged in countries that a lot of people have never been to, as you said. And then the companies themselves, while they have physical headquarters in the United States, mostly in Miami, they are incorporated in other countries as well. So they are thoroughly globalized, and there's not really a way you can argue otherwise.
Well, one thing that you investigated in your story is what happens when someone falls overboard. Because they're basically these floating cities with no police. They're in international waters, and there's all sorts of things that can happen on a family. It doesn't happen that much, but it does happen about 18 times a year, according to your article.
Right. So, on average, 18 times a year. In the past month alone, actually, there's been 4 incidents. So obviously those 18 times aren't necessarily distributed evenly, but 4 in the last month is certainly high. So yeah, a floating city with no police is the term or the phrase that one of my sources used, a man named Kendall Carver, who founded something called the International Cruise Victims Association after his daughter went missing on a cruise in 2004, I believe. And he still doesn't know what happened to his daughter because the way that the investigation unfolded from her disappearance was sort of not as an investigation would normally unfold on land. And that, I think, that really points to what happens when you're on a ship and a crime or a man overboard incident happens, you know, in international waters. Your first point of contact as a maybe companion of that person or a friend of that person is missing is an employee of the cruise line. There's no independent law enforcement on board. So cruise lines do have protocol wherein they alert authorities of the flag state and the next port of call, the next place they're going. But, you know, if they're in the middle of the ocean, hours and hours can go by before independent law enforcement gets involved in a crime. And then in the case of man overboard incidents, hours and hours often go by before they even realize that there was an incident.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Let's say they do see someone fall overboard. Do they stop the ship, or do they just kind of make a call like, hey, this is where this incident happened?
Generally, my understanding is that sort of international maritime law absolutely requires that if you know it's happened, if you see it happen, you're absolutely required to launch a search and rescue mission. And cruise lines do launch their own search and rescue missions. I'm not saying that they never do. But the sort of wrinkle in this is that they don't, and what the piece is largely about, is that there is technology that exists which is called manned overboard detection technology, and it's commercially available. There's several manufacturers that make it. And what that does is if nobody sees the person go over, it sends an automatic alert to the bridge, or, you know, the crew and the captain, when the sensor is triggered anywhere on the ship. And therefore, the ship sort of knows right away that it needs to turn around or address the situation. And it sends an alert with a 10-second video clip from the triggered area. So a crew can view this camera footage and see, you know, was it a body that went over, or was it a wave or a seagull or someone throwing something overboard? So, yeah, so the piece really centers on, if that technology exists, why is it not on cruise lines? Because we're seeing a lot of cases where people go missing and or they go overboard, and we don't find out till hours later. And at that point, it's really difficult for those people to be rescued.
Yeah, I know, because the ship could be hundreds of miles away, and who knows what has happened since then to the person who fell overboard.
Right.
Also, you found out in your investigation that a lot of people who've gone overboard committed suicide.
Yeah, so that's a sort of hard part of the story. And, you know, suicide is absolutely an issue that exists, sadly, throughout our society, on cruise ships and off cruise ships. So it's impossible for us to sort of know, you know, if those incidents would happen or would not happen off a ship. But the piece goes into the aspect of crew man overboard incidents. So between 2009 and 2017, 43 incidents were crew. And the reason for that sort of time scale is that's from a report that the cruise industry put out. And so, so we know that 43 in that time went over. And critics of the industry say that not enough is being done to address the mental health of crew on cruise ships, because, you know, it, like in all shipping environments, it's a really tough job. I mean, I didn't know this before this story, but it's really common for contracts to last up to 9 months, for you to work 7 days a week. You're in close quarters with your fellow crew. You might not have the best connectivity to your family and friends at home. And you're sort of working all, you know, if not working all the time, you're in your work environment a lot. And people I spoke to for the story explained how that can be really isolating. So if you do have underlying issues, it can be a problem. And there's been petitions and sort of calls on from crew and from, like, the cruise ship crew community to put psychologists on board cruise ships to provide more mental health support, in the hopes that this doesn't happen.
Well, let's go back a bit, because you mentioned this. This got started because someone's daughter, I think you said, fell off a cruise ship or disappeared from a cruise ship, and they really didn't get any help. If that happens to someone of your family, they go on a cruise and all of a sudden they're unaccounted for, what type of procedures should you follow to kind of, you know, advance the investigation?
So since Marion Carver was her name, since she went overboard, the law has changed in the United States. In 2010, Congress passed something called the Cruise Vessel Safety and Security Act. And this was sort of a landmark piece of legislation. And Kendall Carver, Marion Carver's father, was very involved in getting it passed. So in part, it says a lot of things. But one of the things it says, that if an American if a U.S. national is a victim of one of nine crimes or commits one of nine crimes on a cruise ship, that ship has to report that incident not only to its flag state, but also to U.S. authorities. And often the FBI will then negotiate jurisdiction over that investigation. So that's a bit of an improvement, in as much as at least Americans can know that, you know, authorities from their own country would be investigating a crime. But do keep in mind that the FBI is not going to arrive, you know, 30 minutes after it happens.
Yeah,
could take hours. It could take hours. It could take, you know, a day or two. And also, it is not unheard of for these investigations to be carried out as a ship sticks to its itinerary, because the business model of cruise ships requires them to not experience, you know, too many days long delays. So, I mean, in terms of your question, in terms of if your family member is a victim to one of these, I don't know that I can answer that entirely. I don't really have, like, a service oriented
advice.
I do think that it's really important for cruise passengers. And part of the reason I wrote this story and wanted to treat this topic with some seriousness is because I think that the way that the cruise industry operates is not really known by enough people. And per the Cruise Vessel Safety and Security Act, you can ask for information on where your vessel is flagged and sort of what crime reporting protocol the cruise ship you're on is following. And so I hope that there will be more of an awareness and willingness on the part of the cruising sort of populace to be more interested in that side of this way of going on vacation.
You know, something that you said earlier, and it's in your article too, and I never really thought about this. This is like a community without a police force is what it is when you get on a cruise, a floating city with no police. And I never really thought about that because you think, oh, a cruise is going to be safe. Everybody's there to have a good time. But if,
right.
you know, if something happened, heaven forbid, on this cruise, some type of crime, boy, I never, you know, how prepared is a cruise ship to investigate, to solve the crime, to get clues, to make, you know, to investigate the crime scene? Those are questions I never even thought to ask.
Right. And I mean, look, the cruise lines will say that they do have, per the CVSSA, again, they're required to have one person on board who's trained in evidence collection. Again, on a ship of 8,000 people or 6,000 guests and, 2,000 crew, that's not a lot.
Yeah.
They will say, we have people who are former law enforcement, former military, former professional security employed on our ships. And that's valid. But if you just think about it in terms of how this would look on land, right? I can't think of another scenario where the people who help you in a moment of crisis or crime are being paid by the people who maybe their brand will be hurt by a crime or a bad thing happening on board their ship. That's just a structure that I don't know another place where that's the case, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I know exactly. It's it's very thought provoking because, like I said, I never thought of anything like that. Because the last thing you think of when you go on vacation is it's going to be some type of crime. But
right. Man,
it's interesting.
Yeah, and also, I mean, look, anyone who's been on a cruise, and now I'm one of those people, can tell you that there's a lot of alcohol on board cruise ships. And if you go on the cruise forum, a big part of going on a cruise is having a good time and not wanting to think about bringing a wallet and signing a check. So the sort of barriers to entry of, am I going to have another drink, are often lowered. And indeed, often people buy all you can drink options. And those are like a part of why people cruise. And if you don't believe me, then just spend some time on cruise forums where people talk about how to get the best deal from these packages.
Yeah.
So, anytime you have lots of alcohol, whether it's on land or at sea or on an airplane or wherever, like the potential for things to go wrong is just higher. And that's sort of just a fact. And that's why critics of the industry are sort of point to the role that alcohol can often play in men overboard incidents, and want to sort of make the point that the cruise lines do play a role in providing that alcohol. Therefore, it's arguable that they play a role in these incidents happening. But just this week, actually the day my story was published on Monday, a court in Miami ruled in favor of Royal Caribbean in the case of Nathan Skocan, who I mentioned in the piece, who went overboard in 2017, and he was very intoxicated. And it was non-intentional, though the cruise line said it was, and that was part of the lawsuit. But the cruise line was absolved of responsibility in contributing to his death.
Wow. What's a fascinating article. If it's okay with you, I want to post this to my blog, a link to it, so people can find your article, because there's a lot of stuff in here. It's very thorough, and really appreciate the time. Very thought-provoking comments, very thought-provoking research. Really appreciate the work that you've done on this.
Oh, thanks so much.
And if you're not familiar with our travel blog, go to travelwithhawkeye.net. It's right there on the front page. Click on that, and we'll have links to everything we talked about on today's podcast and past podcasts also. I'm Mark Hawkeye Lewis. I want to thank our guest, Rosie Spinks from Quartz, and also Aaron Foster from the Unofficial Guide to Disney Cruises. Remember, the world is out there. Your adventure awaits. Thank you for being with us at the start of Season 3 of the Travel with Hawkeye podcast.